Telework. Learn what you and your agency need to know at the Telework Center at federalnewsradio.com, keyword telework. Sponsored by Tanberg, now a part of Cisco.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Colsey. Glad to have you with us. We are here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, and delighted that you're with us, and we're going to have a good show today. We'll be talking with Jessica Clement. She is the Director of Legislation for the Federal Managers Association, and Jessica is one of those people that brought you the FERS sick leave credit last year and on Congress. And then later on, we'll be speaking with Tom Trabucco and Greg Long of the Federal Thrift Savings Board, your Thrift Savings Plan. They're going to bring us up to speed on that. There's a lot of stuff going on here, Jessica. First off, last year, you guys, the FMA and the various employee organizations, had the best year ever. I mean, we can't find anybody who remembers a year when federal workers, postal people, active and retired, got more benefits from Congress.
I can't remember a better year in my career, that's for sure, as short as it may be.
Yeah.
Last year was a really good year for federal employees between the first sick leave credit, the extension of locality pay for folks in Hawaii, Alaska, and the territories, the reemployed annuitants legislation that the president signed into law. It was a great year.
Right, and then the first people are going to be able to, who left and came back into government, many of them would be Clinton appointees in this case, mm-hmm. They'll be able to buy back their time before they had lost it. And that was
right. When they left previously, they cashed out their annual leave. Now you can give the government back that money with a little bit of interest, and it's like you're starting at year X instead of year one.
Yeah, absolutely. Good deal. Now, that was then. This is now. Totally different ball game. The recession continues, minus inflation, which is a good thing up to a point. The retirees got a 5.8% cost of living adjustment in 2009, and the next year they got nothing, and coming up year they're going to get nothing. A whole lot of things have changed. The situation in Congress is, according to the pollsters and the pundits, going to be some big changes in Congress this year. And you know, nobody knows. It's August, and November is a long way off in some respects. But Congress is taking a lot of time off. It's out of town now, I believe, and will not be returning until, what is it, the week
I believe
after
it's September 13th. The Senate's still there now.
Yeah.
The House left town this week. The Senate's in for the rest of this week, and then they're not back again until September 13th.
Okay, but everybody, all members of the House and a third of the Senate are up for reelection, and of those who are running, getting reelected is uppermost on their mind. What happens during a normal lame duck season, and what about this year when you have if the experts are right, a lot of people, there will be a lot of lame ducks for a change. Normally, members of Congress get reelected and reelected and reelected, and there isn't much turnover. And if you're a lame duck, it's by choice; you've decided to resign or retire. This time around, there may be a lot of lame ducks who are unhappy about things, sore-tailed, if you don't know. Does this have a bearing on what could happen to feds?
I think it's definitely going to be an interesting November. I don't want to speculate on what's going to happen in the elections, but I think we're going to see a lot of turnover in both the House and Senate. We're not quite sure how things are going to go. One of the things that's always on the forefront of my mind during the lame duck session is appropriations. The House and Senate are moving on appropriations bills, but not very fast. And for a lot of folks, a lot of your listeners, that means for the start of fiscal year 2011, they're operating at fiscal year 2010 levels. And I know that definitely hurts a lot of folks who need training dollars, need budget dollars to get their work done, and it's just not there.
Training and travel are usually the first ones that's first victims of something like this.
Absolutely. It's like Social Security Administration, and hiring freezes too. That's another thing that impacts when you don't have your next year's budget going in and you're operating at FY10 levels. They don't know if they have money to hire new folks. They can need them, and they can't get them.
And in some cases, they can, it's rarely done, but they can be prosecuted for overspending, can't they? I mean, that's always in the back of their minds.
I'm sure there's a lot of things that go on the mind of feds, you know, during these times.
Yeah. Well, before I ask you about the federal pay raise, which is important, what's up there? What's at play on Capitol Hill? What legislation is pending that is either going to make it or not.
There's a lot of good stuff pending right now. I mean, after a year like last year, I wasn't sure what we'd be able to get done this year, you know, going to Congress asking for even more, saying thank you for what you did for us in 2009, but here's what we need in 2010. Right now, there's bills that have seen some movement are the Paid Parental Leave Act, the telework bill, domestic partners, and the big one on FMA's agenda is the managerial training bill, which passed out of Senate committee a few weeks ago and out of the House subcommittee last week.
Now, how would that work and who would it affect?
It affects all managers and supervisors in the federal government. And basically what it does is that it mandates that once you're promoted to a supervisory position, you must receive training within 1 year of that promotion and then every 3 years thereafter. Numerous studies, time after time, MSPB is telling us, GAO is telling us that managers are promoted to managerial roles based on their technical skills. They're very good at their job and they get promoted. And the GS system is one that you almost have to take on a management role to move up the ranks. So these agencies are promoting very good workers to management positions, but not developing them as managers. They're not teaching them the prohibited personnel practices or how to deal with problem employees or how to give performance assessments. And that is hindering, you know, managers' ability to get their job done. It's frustrating the employees. Like, we need to get managers the training they need to make the government run more efficiently.
It's interesting you'd say that because the MSPB report on that made that very point. And about 30 years ago, there was a PhD guy named Dr. Lawrence Peter, and he and a colleague wrote a book called The Peter Principle, and it was, to shorthand it, that eventually everybody is promoted to their level of incompetence. So I might be a good reporter. They promote me to editor. I'm a lousy editor. Mm-hmm. And he said, if you keep working long enough, you will reach your level of incompetence, which is funny, and it's also kind of sad. And so you're... This training bill would sort of skip that because people who are promoted because of their technical expertise may be great at that, but they're not necessarily good supervisors or managers. So they need training and they need updated training.
Absolutely. I mean, things change all the time, especially technology, and you need new training on technology. And with all the discussion about performance management systems and changes to the federal government in that respect, you need to train these people to give their employees full, complete feedback on how well they're doing their jobs.
Does something like this have a cost? If, for instance, I'm a GS 11 and I'm promoted to a 13, and they make me a supervisor or a manager. Is there any idea what that training would cost in that first year?
There is a training. There is a cost. I believe the new bill that came out of the Senate, we did a lot of changes from the bill from last Congress to this Congress, and I think the new cost is $70 million over 5 years. And it's a lot of administrative things, like someone needs to keep track. OPM, under the bill, OPM is required to keep track of a central database of who's being trained and when, so that's an administrative function on OPM. And also, you know, you either have to pay instructors to do this training or get the web training set up and the... And so there's costs, you know, to administer the bill. What the CBO score doesn't take into effect, which we would have liked to have seen, was that we anticipate this bill will lead to fewer disgruntled employees, less MSPB claims, fewer EEOC complaints, and there will be some cost savings on the back end. But since we can't say how much that would be, you know, it's to CBO that's only looks at the very concrete numbers. They can't take that into account.
Yeah, you're talking about what might not happen.
Right.
There might be fewer cases, might be more, you know, less tussling. You mentioned paid parental leave, which is a bill pending up there. I got a couple of emails last week, and I could not find an answer to the people, but they were wanting to know what the progress was, what the status was. And could you first explain what paid parental leave is? Because I know in the private sector, and it's happened before, mm-hmm. Some president or some Congress said, yeah, give them 3 weeks of leave to take care of a baby or something, but they didn't mention that it's not paid leave.
Not paid. Current law says right now, if you have a child, you are allowed, or adopt a child, you are allowed 12 weeks of unpaid leave and you can't get fired. So all new mothers are currently allowed 12 weeks of unpaid leave. What the bill in Congress currently does, the House bill, would allow for federal employees 4 of those weeks would be administrative paid leave. And then the remaining eight, you could use a combination of your other leave, your sick leave, your annual leave. And in which sense, you know, if you were going to use your sick leave or your annual leave, you would then also be getting paid during
okay.
that time.
Okay, so four paid and the remaining eight mm-hmm. would be, you could pay yourself by using your leave or whatnot.
Right.
Where is that bill now?
It actually passed the House a while ago, but the Senate bill has been stalled. I mean, the House passed this, to my knowledge, it was several months ago.
Any reason it stalled in the Senate?
It has a very large cost.
Uh-huh. What do you have any idea? Okay. Yeah, how many people
I believe there is some disagreement as to how much this costs mm-hmm. and why, but it is very big. I mean, big in comparison to other federal employee bills, not big in comparison to, say, the stimulus bill.
Well, I can see where it would be controversial for some people. You know, they said, I had my kids the old-fashioned way, and mm-hmm. and we took care of it. To add insult to injury, more controversy, what does this say about domestic partners and same-sex partners who adopt a child?
That I'm uncertain of, but it does... It does allow for the adoption of a child. Mm-hmm. So if you know you as the federal employee adopt a child, you are covered under this bill. What it means for your domestic partner, I can't necessarily
say. Well, yeah, and
say.
I can see, yeah, status, that might not even be mm-hmm. an issue. Now, if I'm married to a federal employee and I am a federal employee, could each of us take this time off?
I do believe that is true.
Okay, so I could take 12, and then the wife could take 12, mm-hmm. or vice versa. Okay, well, that's I can see where a lot of people. What do you remember the number of that bill?
Yes, the House bill is H.R. 626, and the Senate bill is S. 354.
And are they identical or
yes.
similar? Okay, so that's good. Okay,
yeah.
Now let's see. What else did you say? We need to take a short break here. Talking with Jessica Clement from the Federal Managers Association, getting a rundown on what's pending legislation, and we'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
A new public website has been launched by the Department of Energy, designed to promote a better understanding of gasification technology, an increasingly popular alternative to converting feedstocks like coal and biomass into useful products such as electricity or fuels. Officials say gasification is anticipated to be the technology of choice for future near-zero emissions coal-based plants. The process uses heat, pressure, and steam to convert any carbon-based raw material into synthesized gas. The website, dubbed Gasifapedia, contains both introductory and in-depth information. You'll find the new Gasifapedia through the Department's Energy Lab website at www.netl.doe.gov.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Attention AFGE members, government, and military employees. Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. Purchase any laptop from July 15th through August 15th and receive a free custom skin. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
AFGE members are eligible for a 6% members only discount.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 AM Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind. But are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in home monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems and pay just $18.95 a month, and there's no cost to switch. Why Ackerman? Ackerman has over 40 years of industry-leading experience. Ackerman monitors your home from its UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center. Ackerman was recently recognized as the National Dealer of the Year from from over 30,000 companies. Get the most qualified professionals monitoring your home for just $18.95 per month. And Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Over 180,000 people enjoy peace of mind with Ackerman. Federal employees, call today and get 4 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service. Call 888-999-1070, 888-999-1070, or visit AckermanSecurity.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Wednesday edition of the Dorabeck Insider. Do GSA schedule contract prices represent the best price or just a starting point for negotiations? Insights from Harvard professor Steve Kelman. And meaningful use incentives for electronic health records are seen as a big step toward the broader use of health IT. We'll find out what they are and why they matter. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Jessica Clement. She is Legislative Director of the Federal Managers Association. Jesse, did I get your title correct?
You did.
Okay. You run the lobbying outfit there and know an awful lot about how things are working on Capitol Hill. As we said, 2009 was probably the best year federal workers have ever had in Congress. They got a numerous things, big buck changes that is not likely to be repeated maybe in any of our lifetimes, but still you keep plugging ahead.
I'm going to be working to make sure it happens, Mike.
Okay, never say die. Well, and you gave us a really good rundown on the paid parental leave. That was eye-opening to me, and the some other things that are pending on the Hill. And I remind people, if you didn't hear it or if you missed it or want to hear it again or refer to a friend, our shows are archived on our webpage, so you can click on that, and they should be up today, shortly after the show itself. So if you want to listen again, listen at home. Maybe they have a streaming problem in your agency, and you can't do it. So you can listen to us anytime, and we love to have the repeat visitors. Jessica, teleworking. It's like it was Mark Twain or Benjamin Franklin said, like the weather. Everybody talks about it, nobody does anything about it. They've been pushing teleworking for decades now. Congressman Frank Wolf of Virginia, I guess he represents probably the congressional district with the second worst traffic in America, second only to Los Angeles. But Northern Virginia is a mess, as anybody knows who drives around there. And he has been pushing teleworking for low these many years. And he even got some teeth in some of the things. Said if agencies on the appropriation committee that he ran, if the agencies weren't complying, they could fine them, in effect, take away some of their money. One of the problems, I used the royal we, one of the problems we found in monitoring teleworking is some agencies would say, okay, Jessica Clement, you will telework one day a year, but we're going to put you down as part of the teleworking program. They found several instances of that. So they could say, yeah, we have 10,000 people teleworking, but it was only one day a year. So they've worked all kinds of things, all kind of magic, and they're trying to sell this as not as a perk to the employees, although it would be that, but they're trying to sell it as a benefit to the taxpayers. And the recent our 31-inch snow, which you, a Wisconsinite, scoffed at, but for us it was a very big deal. But that sort of gave people a preview of what could happen, this continuation of operations. What happens if, for any reason, there's a shutdown of weather? We had an earthquake not long ago after 31 inches of snow. So can you tell us how the teleworking thing, how it would change the situation from where it is now and what the chances are for this bill?
Well, I think one thing that we all need to get on board with, and this is what I tell our members all the time, is telework's coming whether you like it or not. The administration is pushing this. Congress is pushing this. You know, this is really high on OPM's agenda. If you start embracing it now and learning about telework and how it could work in your agencies, you're going to be ahead of the curve when these regulations eventually come out, and they're going to. So we should all jump on board with the teleworking bandwagon now. OPM is trying to do this through regulations. Two bills in Congress have both passed their respective chamber. The House and Senate are now in conference to hammer out the very small differences between the two bills and hopefully get a bill to the president to sign in September. Basically, what the bills say is that you are eligible to telework unless deemed otherwise. So every employee is deemed telework eligible until, you know, someone higher in their organization says that they are not. And there are a large percentage of folks out there, I think it was right around 30% of people, 35%, who responded to the OPM Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey, says that the nature of their job says that they can't work. They are security guards in buildings. They build ships. They work on ships at our national shipyards. You know, there are jobs out there that are just, you can't telework based on the nature of those jobs. If you are someone who answers the phone in the local Social Security office, or you know, give people numbers when they walk into their local Social Security office, those folks can't telework. You know, you need to be physically present to deal with the people who come into their offices. But there are that other 70, 65% out there who maybe could telework once a week, twice a week.
And they're not talking about people permanently teleworking from home. I think Patent and Trademark Office, they're always the sort of the good poster child.
They're the model.
For teleworking. And I think a majority of their people now, or certainly their lawyers and patent examiners, mm-hmm. are teleworking, and they yep. come in maybe, I think, one day every 2 weeks
for
a conference. So that's not going to happen in a lot of places. But how does it work now? For instance, say I work in a normal place like mm-hmm. HUD or GSA or Interior, not one of the high security agencies. And could I, as a supervisor, just arbitrarily say, if you want to telework, you can do it one day a week? Could I do that?
Yes, I believe you can.
Okay.
So, you know, the employee has to come ask, and I'm sure there's many bureaucratic channels mm-hmm. to run it through. But yes, you have that option now. You don't need this legislation to tell you that, you know, you're allowed to telework.
Okay.
You can do that now.
This is encouraging. I mean, it's a sea change to say everybody can telework unless you say otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Take a short break here. We'll be right back and pick up with teleworking here on WFED 1500 AM.
Checking your daily TSP ticker, the latest numbers from August 3rd, 2010. The G Fund is unchanged at 1336. The F Fund rises 0.04 at 1421. But the C Fund loses 0.06 at $13.42. The S Fund is down 0.15 at 1765. The I Fund gains 0.11 at $18.26. Your L Funds stand still or lose a little. The 2010 is at 1556. It's unchanged. The 2020 is down 0.02 at 1569. 2030 falls 0.02 at $15.86. The 2040 is down 0.03 at 1604. And the L income is unchanged at 1420. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If you've been around Washington as long as I have, you know the one constant is change. The players change, laws change. If you're a federal retiree or soon to be one, you need to know that some of those changes could affect your retirement future. There's one association fighting to make sure that doesn't happen, and that's NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. If you work for or have worked for Uncle Sam, you need NARF. NARF is the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then, click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. Or call them at 800-627-3394, 800-627-3394, and have them send you more information.
How does technology transform social services in New York City? What about data center consolidation? How can technology improve outcomes and responsiveness? Listen next week as these questions and more will be explored with Richard Seamer, Deputy Commissioner and CIO at the New York City Human Resources Administration on the Business of Government Hour.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
1,500 people are dead in Pakistan because of flooding, and the Pentagon is dispatching several helicopters from Afghanistan to transport relief supplies and refugees. Four CH-47 Chinooks and two UH-60 Blackhawks will be sent over. Bad weather hindered their arrival yesterday, but they're expected to begin their work today. Pakistan has repeatedly rejected, at least publicly, a U.S. military presence on the ground, but in this case, the government said yes. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a lot of talk about thinking outside the box. But what about thinking inside the box? Airink is a company that looks at every angle when solving problems. In fact, Airink recently helped convert regular cargo containers into sophisticated air traffic and communications control facilities for use abroad, combining the shipping box and actual equipment into one turnkey system. Imagine that. Log on to www.arinc.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Jessica Clement. She is Legislative Director of the Federal Managers Association and tracks all of this stuff of interest to federal workers and retirees up on the Hill. We're talking about teleworking, which has been being pushed for years with various degrees of vigor. And this time it looks like, as they used to say in Rocky and Bullwinkle, this time for sure. You've got Senate and House in conference. Mm-hmm. They are going to come up with a compromise bill. It is going to go to the White House. The president will sign it. And as you were saying, it would, in effect, everybody is eligible for teleworking unless someone in higher authority says, no, not because of your job. You alluded earlier to that managers and supervisors had better get with the program. And mm-hmm. It's coming. It's going to happen. And you hear this anecdotally. And I've had some emails from people. Obviously, there are horror stories in any endeavor, but of some people who just said that teleworking doesn't work because if I can't see them, I don't know what they're doing, and the tendency will be to go off and watch Dr. Phil or Oprah or take your dog for a walk and do that kind of thing. How do you counter that?
I think one, managers need more training as to how they should know what their employees are doing, even if they can't see them, for one. And then I think you need to take a hard look at the employees that you're managing. And if you have an employee who shows up to work every day, does his job on time, occasionally goes above and beyond, you have no reason to distrust that the employee wouldn't get his job done if he was doing it somewhere else. Now, I'm sure there's a handful of problem employees out there. Managers know that they will not get their job done if they're not watching over them 8 hours a day. And then it's time to have a difficult conversation with those employees and say, I don't trust you to get your job done when you're not here. Let's work to increase your performance and then talk about telework 6 months down the road.
John Elliott, benefits strategist, has suggested several times that the government needs to do a 180 thought change, mm-hmm. or at least some supervisors and managers, in that you don't have to have people in front of you all the time. Like when I first came to work, that was the norm. If you out of sight, you had to check in, but people really put in their 8+ hours a day and let it be known they were there. He says we should shift to a results oriented system, whereby if you can get the job done in 2 hours and it's really good, mm-hmm. not have them punching a time clock in and out. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, that's really one of the initiatives that OPM is pushing right now, this results-oriented workplace that basically says you can get your job done at any point throughout the day, whether it's 5 a.m. to noon or noon to 7. As long as you get the job done, it shouldn't matter where you do it or when you do it. Now, there are a lot of jobs out there that do require a certain amount of interaction with other people, such as mine.
Sure.
I'm here doing your radio show. I got to go to Congress, do my things. That results-oriented workplace probably wouldn't work as well for me because my schedule is very dependent on other people's schedules. So it's not going to work for everyone, but I think it could work for folks out there.
And I guess, too, you have to overcome the resentment of people because of the nature of their job will probably never be able to telework. And the bad news there, the good news is that's just a condition of employment.
Right. I do think some people get some benefits out of being in the workplace. I think people could say, I'm not quite sure that I want to work at home and be by myself all day long. I'd much rather come into the office.
I, at the Washington Post, the last couple of years there, I worked I teleworked on Fridays, and I would either go to their Rockville bureau or to the Alexandria bureau. I had friends in both, mm-hmm. and it was good to see them, good to get away from the office, mm-hmm. still be with people, minimal phone calls, and I was probably very productive and had to do two columns at that on that day. So Friday was my worst day, but that made it better. But I think I'm one of these people that I need an office environment, and you know, I need to feed off people and get tips. Chris Dorbeck and I worked together on an internet company for a year, and I had a flashback when you said that, because with the tech people who made up most of the organization, the rule was you can work anytime you want. And some of these people were night owls, so right. they would come in at 6 p.m. or 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. and work. And as far as I know, nobody was punching a time clock. It was results-oriented, and it seemed to work beautifully. If there were problems, I never heard of them.
It's a big change for the federal government. I think it can work, but managers and supervisors are going to need a lot of training.
And again, that dovetails with the training bill that's moving on the Hill.
Absolutely.
That's the one that's passed the House.
It passed House Subcommittee and Senate Full Committee. So we're moving in the right direction. It's a little slower than we would like, but I have some friends in Congress who are committed to making this work.
Okay, and we dealt with parental leave. You're one of your favorites. Your favorite four-letter word is NSPS, National Security Personnel System. And this is a quick refresher. This was a Bush administration initiative. Mm-hmm. The idea was to give managers more tools in the form of money to be able to reward top performers with bigger pay raises, and, you know, conversely, to kind of gig people who weren't up to snuff into seeing the light. Some people loved it, others hated it. The administration hoped it would spread to other federal agencies. The unions opposed it from day one, mm-hmm. and they were successful finally when a Democratic Congress came in killing it off. So NSPS is going away. Now, at its peak, it had 226,000. You're right. And these employees, it was interesting, because of the union opposition, these employees that went into the NSPS were a different breed of cat in that they were mm-hmm. they were not covered by union bargaining mm-hmm. agreements, and many of them were supervisors and managers. And I had a column earlier this week with some numbers, and you brought in some even more updated numbers.
Right. We just got the updated numbers from the NSPS transition office that they wanted. Their goal was to have 75% of the 226,000 converted to the general schedule by the start of the next fiscal year. And that translates to about 176,000 employees. As of July 18th, just over 109,000 employees have transitioned from NSPS to the general schedule.
Let me ask you some numbers in a minute, but we need to take a short break here. We'll be right on WFED, 1500 AM.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com explores the hard issues surrounding cloud computing from the government's perspective, sharing with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com, or follow the Fed Cloud blog on Twitter, sponsored by Intel and Cisco. Two technology companies leading the cloud revolution.
40 kilometers northwest of Kandahar, Afghanistan, at a remote desert military base, American soldiers are playing video games. There are cold drinks, snacks, comfy chairs, and an internet connection. It's the USO To Go program, and it's just one of the ways the USO supports our troops, lifts their spirits, and serves as a link with the American people. Find out how you can help. Visit us at USO.org. The USO, until everyone comes home.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey talking with Jessica Clement, Federal Managers Association, and the subject is the National Security Personnel System. It was a Bush administration initiative. Some people loved it, some people hated it. They had hoped it would go government-wide, but in fact, because of union opposition and opposition from many Democrats in Congress, mm-hmm. it's killed. They're rolling people back, and you said that of the 226,000, they have to date rolled back 109,000 people, put them back in the GS system. And how are they faring once they go back? Because I know people were worried that if I go back, I don't fit anymore. And
right.
I had a guy, and he showed me his paperwork. He was, in effect, a GS 14 step 15.
Yeah.
And that is, and there are only 10 steps in it, but because of pay raises, I think he'd gotten $8,000 more than he would have under the GS system. And what's happening to the people who are getting rolled back?
Well, you probably just described about half the emails I get on
okay.
a daily basis. Uh-huh. We have heard from hundreds of employees on this, you know, many of them who didn't come from the general schedule, but they were told, you know, this job is a GS-14 equivalent. And now they're finding out when they transition, it was really a GS-13. That's happened to many employees across the country. But to answer your question, the rules were when you go back that if you're between two steps, you will go to the higher step and you get a pay raise accordingly. If you are above step 10, you go on pay retention, which means you only get half the general pay increase until the general schedule catches up with you. So to date, 72% of the folks that have transitioned from NSPS to the general schedule received a pay increase. Their pay fell between two steps and then they go to the higher step. And that average payout has been over $1,400. And then 8% of the folks were exactly at the step. So they received no pay increase or decrease. But the number that really has FMA alarmed, and one that we've been working to prevent for almost the last year now, 20% of those transitioning from NSPS to the general schedule are going to be are already on pay retention. And that equates to just shy of 22,000 employees.
So they will get a half pay. If there's a pay raise in January, they will get half of that amount.
They will get half of that amount.
Until their colleagues, their office mates catch up with them.
Exactly.
Okay. And that's an interesting discussion. It's glass half full, half empty. And I got some really good emails on the subject, and I'm going to use them tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But one guy said, you know, hey, life isn't fair. He said, I got my raises. I got three raises. I did better than I would have under the GS. So I'm ahead of the curve, and
right.
I'm pre-funded, if you will.
And that's the same argument you'll hear from DOD and OPM. That's the argument they give every time. You know, they draw a pretty little graph and say, this is all the money that you got under NSPS that had NSPS never existed, you never would have gotten. So just be grateful.
Okay. But the other side of that is that they're going to be getting half a loaf raises for a while.
The other side of this is that I think it's fair to assume that those 20% were the ones who went above and beyond under NSPS, finally got pay raises according to how well they were doing their job, not based on an arbitrary number that Congress came up with every year. And they thrived under the system. And now they're going back into the general schedule. They're looking at the guy sitting next to them who, you know, who puts in his 8 hours, does his job, doesn't go above and beyond, and goes home. He's getting the full pay raise Congress says he will. And then the guy who goes above and beyond is only getting half. I think DOD is going to be faced with the situation where 20% of their folks are extremely demoralized.
Is there anything that can realistically be done about that?
We've been working with Congress to fix this. The defense authorization bill that passed the House gave DOD a November 15th deadline to report to Congress on what the average January payout will be, including the number of people on pay retention and how far out they are. Like, are we talking a couple thousand dollars there above the GS system, you know, above the step 10? That's probably not all that alarming. But are we talking about tens of thousands of dollars? Then the general schedule is never going to catch up with them. They're going to be
years.
On pay retention until they retire. So I think the gravity of the situation has yet to be fully explored. And I think the House version of the defense authorization bill seeks to fix that. But, you know, we're still working on some sort of legislative fix before the January payout in 2011.
I'm just thinking on my feet here, if you have somebody who's close to retirement, a couple of years, two, 3 years mm-hmm. away, and they're significantly ahead of their grade, if by getting half pay raises, that's going to impact their retirement annuity down the road.
It absolutely impacts their retirement annuity, and those are the folks that we're paying particular attention to, that we want to make sure this gets fixed before they retire. The flip side of that argument is, well, had NSPS never existed, you wouldn't be making that much now anyway, and therefore your annuity is still greater than it would have been. My answer to that is, these people didn't ask for NSPS. They got jerked in and out of systems for 3 years. They had to deal, you know, with, you know, Congress's whims, and then, you know, them excluding bargaining unit employees, and NSPS never realized its potential. It had great potential, and it failed. And these folks are being jerked around. You know, they didn't ask for NSPS, and now you're punishing them for thriving under a system that they had a very difficult time dealing with.
Well, I know the critics of NSPS, and they are legion, American Federation of Government Employees, foremost among them and most successful in getting it rolled back. They said that these big raises under the NSPS, A, they went to sort of management-oriented people, but B, and they used the term, I think, that defense threw money at the system to make it look good, to make people see or believe that they were getting better raises than they would have under the GS.
Right. And I know that was a concern from folks on the Hill, too. You know, could DOD sustain these big raises? But the reason they were, you know, being thrown at management folks is because most of the 226,000 are managerial employees. Bargaining unit employees did not transition to NSPS, so yes, they were excluded from receiving these raises, and about 900 employees went into a bargaining unit after they had gone into NSPS.
Yeah.
There was about 900 bargaining unit employees in NSPS.
Okay, that's a small number.
Very small number.
Yeah. The pay raise, federal pay raise. Retirees are not going to get a cost of living adjustment in 2011. They did not get one this year in 2010 because of the economic conditions.
Right.
Consumer price index is down. There's nothing to trigger it. That applies to people who get Social Security and military retired pay.
Mm-hmm.
But federal workers appear to be in line for a raise. What is it and where is it now?
Well, as I'm sure your listeners are well aware, there have been at least three attempts by Congress to freeze the pay of federal employees for 2011, which would mean no pay raise. All three attempts have failed. So, you know, we're happy about that. I don't expect that's the last of it. I think we'll see it again before the end of the year. The pay raise, you know, the president gives Congress his recommendation, and the president recommended a 1.4% pay increase for both military and civilians in 2011. And then it's kind of up to the appropriations committees to decide what they want to do with the president's request. And so far on the House side, they haven't come out publicly with if they're going to have a figure in their bill. But the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Financial Services recently recommended a 1.4% pay raise for federal employees. So that's a bit of good news for your listeners.
And do they have a higher amount for the military?
The military pay raise is determined in the Defense Authorization Bill.
Okay.
The House Defense Authorization Bill for FY11 said 1.9%, and that passed the House back in June, I believe. The Senate version of the Defense Authorization Bill, which only recently came out of committee but has not hit the Senate floor yet, was 1.4%.
So, all right, that's very good. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for being with us here. Really kind of you to come in and give us... Okay. All right, we'll take a right break. We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Estate plan, your hard-earned wealth will end up in the hands of the government, and a will is no protection. At Zell Law, our estate planning lawyers take the time to listen and understand you and your goals and figure out what you want to achieve. Then we work with you to create a customized estate plan that helps you and your family realize your dreams of wealth and freedom. Find out how we do this by joining me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
You're an agent of change, making changes for the better in the face of shrinking budgets and expanding expectations. Amplify your agency's possibilities with unified communication solutions from Verizon that enable you to securely and reliably work where you work best, at a kitchen table or an office abroad. Change your team into a dynamic, interactive 24/7 think tank with our collaboration solutions and BlackBerry Bold smartphones, and transform smaller budgets into bigger successes. So while demands are rising and funds are declining, you can address both with powerful, global mobile voice and data solutions from Verizon. Find out how you can make your teams even more powerful and effective at verizonwireless.com/gov or by calling 1-800-293-3048. Verizon. Rule the air.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community, sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email your questions and comments to FedTalk@FederalNewsRadio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. And this week on Fed Talk, host Deborah Roth takes up the issue of federal contracting with show guests including the Homeland Security and Defense Business Council.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for August is Vehicles for Change, a nonprofit organization repairing and providing donated cars to low-income families. A car is the most valuable poverty-fighting tool that can be provided to a low-income family, and Vehicles for Change has awarded over 3,200 cars since 1999. The car increases the opportunity for better employment and family activities never before possible. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Community Spotlight is brought to you by Ackerman Security Systems.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and we're wrapping up here with Jessica Clement. She is Legislative Director of the Federal Managers Association. Jessica, you and I are going to be meeting again next week in Atlanta.
Yes, we are.
At the FDR Conference, and I'm just telling you earlier, when people say, where are you going, and you tell them why, and I say, the FDR Conference, what's that? Can you tell them what's that? It's nothing to do with Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
It does not. It's the Federal Dispute Resolution Conference, and it's basically a three-and-a-half, four-day event for managers, supervisors, HR specialists, lawyers. You know, their sessions run the gamut of training for federal employees.
It's interesting. It seems about 50 to 60% of the people that attend each year are first-timers, but they also have a lot of repeat people. I would guess a third to a half are from the Washington area, but that said, they're from all over the country. And one thing that strikes me about all of these, and they've had this in some pretty wonderful places, Palm Desert and New York and whatnot, and if you go by any of these workshops, the breakout sessions and whatnot, they're packed. They're full of people. And you go out to the pool, and I just go out there to check and see if others are doing it. And you may have spouses or kids that are relaxing, but these feds, they're sent there to do it. The agency's paid the fee, and they do it. And some of the best workshops I have ever encountered are out there. And there's some days when you're hard-pressed to figure out which one you want to go to.
Well, and they do run a lot of their sessions twice throughout the week. You know, there are a few sessions going on at any given time, and if you miss it the first time, you may be able to catch it on the back end.
And you and I and Bill Bransford, who is the chairman of the FDR conference, a very prominent attorney here, and he's legal counsel for the Senior Executives Association. We're going to have a legislative workshop down there. Hope people will come in and sign up. You're already paid, so come and visit with us and get a lot of inside information. And the feedback is so interesting, too. These are smart people. They're concerned or they wouldn't be there, and yet some of the things they ask let you know what news is not filtering out, not only to the provinces, but here in the D.C. area.
Right. I think you and I did this last year for the first time. It was at least my first time at FDR on the legislative panel. I was incredibly pleased with the turnout we had. So if folks who are listening are going down to Atlanta next week, come see us. I believe our panel is Tuesday afternoon, right after lunch. Mike, Bill Bransford, and I will be giving you an update on what's going on legislatively in terms of federal employees.
And they gave me some goodie bags. I mean, in addition to taking some columns that I think will be worthwhile for people background, but I have some pins and things to give out, Federal News Radio pins. So going to be a good event. We would like to see there. And if you're listening, even if you can't come to our workshop, if you see us in the hall, stop by and say hello.
FMA has a booth there as well, which I will be exhibiting at. So feel free to stop by and say hi.
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the neat things about this is the number of vendors.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of exhibitors.
WEPA is there, GRB, all kinds of outfits who provide services to government workers. Blue Cross, of course, Geico, people like that. And they have some pretty good goodies to give away, too.
Bring I made sure to pack candy so I can draw people to the booth.
Very good. Okay. So we're not going to do as well this year. We can't do as well this year legislatively as we did last year. That was the perfect storm. But you're hopeful about the teleworking bill.
I'm hopeful for a teleworking bill. I am very optimistic for the teleworking bill. I am semi-optimistic for the managerial training bill, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed for a pay raise.
Okay, and
if I was a betting person, that's where I'd lay my bets.
Right, and the paid parental leave?
It's still got to go through the Senate, and the Senate has a lot of work to do in the remainder of this year. They are very far behind the House.
And it's going to be, it'll be more interesting for me than for you, because I'm sort of an outsider. You've got to work with them. But this lame duck section of Congress could be very strange and very quirky. Mm-hmm. It could even get ugly for people.
And I think it might get a little ugly. I think we'll see an omnibus appropriations bill. As much as I don't like them, I think that's probably where we're going in the lame duck session.
Yeah, and I was interested to know, too, that the military pay is handled by the defense authorization in the Senate. Is that right?
In both.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but the federal pay raise is in
appropriations.
Appropriations. Okay, so they're doing different tracks. And I know the federal groups are always asking for pay raise parity, meaning get the same percentages of military. But that could, it's likely that may not happen this year.
Well, last year we didn't get pay parity. I mean, this is always on top of FMA's agenda. It's on top of all the federal employee groups. Pay parity is very important to feds. And we didn't get it last year for the first time in over two decades. Mm-hmm. And the administration assured us, you know, you will see pay parity coming from the administration in 2011. And the president put forth pay parity, but it's up to Congress to decide what they want to do. And it's not uncommon for the defense authorization folks to give the military more than what the president asked for. That's actually fairly standard.
And that's a tough one, even though you can argue equity and fairness. That's a tough one, given the wars going on and all that sort of thing. One thing I find is the feds are not whining about this, and it's wonderful. Jessica, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I will see you in Atlanta. We'll see you all back here next Wednesday, I hope. Have a good week. And just remember, we're here every Wednesday, 10 a.m., WFED, 1500 a.m.
Don't be surprised by the latest changes to your commute. Get traffic and weather together every 10 minutes on the 8s on 103.5 FM, WTOP Radio. Now back on 107.7 FM.
Today's Emergency Preparedness Series is brought to you by the D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency.
If disaster strikes, are you prepared to rebuild? A little hard work now could help a lot later. Protect your property with a home inventory that's kept in a safe place outside of your home. An accurate inventory and proof of ownership, including photos and receipts, can make an insurance claim a lot faster and easier. The inventory will take time to compile, but the time and frustration it may save you later will more than make up for it. I'm Mark Seagraves.
Beat the heat. Know the difference between an advisory and a warning. An excessive heat advisory means that extreme heat is likely. An excessive heat warning means that extreme heat is likely and can pose a threat to life if proper precautions are not taken. Do you have a plan to beat the heat? The D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency wants to help you learn how to avoid the dangers of extreme summer heat. Visit their website at 72hours.dc.gov for more information. It could save your life.
Save money at HalfPriceDC.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more.
This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price